Welcome again in peace to you. Ashe, ashe. This morning we focus on an important aspect of our faith, that we are a justice-seeking religion, that justice is central to who we are. There are many ways that we at First Parish are collectively and individually involved in the work of justice. And over the course of this year, we will engage in a discernment process to focus on how we can even better advance that aspect of our mission. To that end, there's a survey available to you today at the social action table to help in that process. Presently, our children and youth are studying the Jewish tradition and the Hebrew scriptures, and we come together with words today from the prophet Micah.
With what shall I come before God? Shall I come with burnt offerings, with calves of a year old? Will God be pleased with thousands of rams, with 10,000 rivers of olive oil? Shall I offer my firstborn for my transgression? O mortals, you know what is good, and what is it that is required of you? To love mercy, to do justice, and to walk humbly with your God.
And now, as the Haberly family comes forward to light our chalice, I invite you to find the chalice lighting words in your order of service and join me in reciting them. Blessed is the fire that burns deep in the soul. It is the flame of the human spirit touched into being by the mystery of life. It is the flame of reason, the fire of compassion, the fire of community, the fire of justice, the fire of faith. It is the fire of love burning deep in the human heart, the divine glow in every life. Love is the spirit of this church, and service its law. This is our great covenant, to dwell together in peace, to seek the truth and love, and to help one another. Please be seated and be attentive to a message from our Director of Religious Education.
Good morning. Today, Tom's going to be speaking about a topic called My Religion is Justice. And when I first heard him say this, I think he knew this, but I thought it was kind of an odd topic, because when I thought about justice, I started thinking about, you know, truth, justice in the American way, and superhero justice, and smiting all the bad people. And I thought, oh, that doesn't really sound like Tom. And then, so I puzzled it in. I didn't really want to go and tell him he was wrong, because you can't really tell the minister they're wrong. But then I started thinking, wait a minute. Then I started thinking, well, wait a minute, there's another meaning of the word justice. And can anyone else think of a different meaning of justice other than punishing someone for being wrong? All right, and I'm just going to walk around here. What do you think, Sheena?
I think that
another meaning for justice is peace. That's a good definition. Anyone else have another thing to add to that? What else could justice mean? All right. I think if you go along with peace, then you think about if you want to be peaceful, you're going to do the thing that's right. And sometimes it is very, very hard to do the thing that's right. It's very hard to think about putting other people first. And that's about a lot of the work that we do in this church is justice work, social justice work that means you put someone else first. Can anyone think of a time when they've volunteered somewhere, gone somewhere with their family, done something that has been social justice work, putting someone else first, helping out someone else? Anyone done some social justice work? Or their parents might have done some social justice work? You know, and parents can speak up if they know their kids have done some social justice work. For example, oh good, I'm glad Xiaowen, because I know Xiaowen does a lot of social justice work with her family.
such people.
Believe it or not, there's a lot of people in this world that do not have enough food. So if we take our food and help other people out, that's a type of social justice. This morning, I'm going to embarrass my daughter a little bit, but she's doing a social justice project every Sunday because she has to be here for both services. She's been volunteering her time in the nursery every Sunday, so that's a social justice project.
Does it have to be people? Meg has gone to the animal shelter and
volunteered. Volunteering in an animal shelter is social justice. So justice is doing the right thing for other people, and usually it helps you feel really good at the end of that, too. So this week, what I want you to do is you're going about going to school or playing your sports, hanging out. I want you to think about how, as we in this church, that our religion is about three things that Tom the minister has been speaking about. That our religion is about community, our religion is about kindness, and our religion is about justice. So, and I think those are really three great things to believe in. And I hope that as you go about your week, you can think about how you can show community, kindness, and justice in your own lives. Thank you.
As is our custom, we take the light that we kindle together in our service and send it off with our children and youth for their religious education program. Walter Stolonik is going to be our lantern bearer today, so after Walter lights it, I invite everyone who's going to religious education to follow him and the lantern over to the other building. O Spirit of Life, source of justice, whom some of us call God and others do not, be present among us today. Open our eyes that we may see beyond the walls of privilege. Open our ears that we may hear the cries of those who have little or no voice in our society. Open our minds that we may have a better understanding of the complexity of the issues we address. And open our hearts that we may experience the transformation possible when guided by love and compassion, we do the work of justice. Let us now gently leave our time of shared silence. It was Winston Churchill who once said, "We make a living by what we earn, and we make a life by what we give away." Each week we provide you with an opportunity to make a life through generosity. Unlike other faith traditions, this church does not receive funds from a denomination or any outside hierarchy, but is totally supported by this community. Your contributions are very important. The morning offering will now be gratefully accepted.
There is no freedom, the wise man said, let justice roll down when the poor cry out for shelter and bread. Let justice roll down like a mighty stream. Oh, children, don't you get weary. Walk together, believe in the dream. When the way gets rough, we will make a new way. Let justice roll down like a mighty stream. Hatred will never drive out hate. Let love roll down, roll down. Remember our hearts can make us great. Let love roll down like a mighty stream. Oh, children, don't you get weary. Walk together, believe in the dream. When the way gets rough, we will make a new way. Let love roll down like a mighty stream. When brutality threatens our daughters and sons, let peace roll down, roll down. May our voices ring out above the guns. Let peace roll down like a mighty stream. Oh, children, don't you get weary. Walk together, believe in the dream. When the way gets rough, we will make a new way. Let peace roll down like a mighty stream. When fists rise up to strike a blow, let songs roll down, roll down. May the poets remind us of what we know. Let songs roll down like a mighty stream. Oh, children, don't you get weary. Walk together, believe in the dream. When the way gets rough, we will make a new way. Let songs roll down like a mighty stream. Step by step and one by one, let justice roll down, roll down. They can kill the prophet, but the dream lives on. Let justice roll down like a mighty stream. Oh, children, don't you get weary. Walk together, believe in the dream. When the way gets rough, we will make a new way. Let justice roll down like a mighty stream. Let justice roll down. Let justice roll down. Let justice roll down. Let justice roll down like a mighty stream.
I'd like to share a reading with you this morning from the Quaker theologian, philosopher, inspirer, Parker Palmer. He writes, "In an age which seeks private therapy for every kind of problem, we must learn that public life provides a therapy unattainable in the private realm. It is the therapy of being drawn out of oneself by interest in others, the therapy of learning that one is not alone, the therapy that comes when together we resist the conditions that say no to life and create the conditions that say yes. The church has a special opportunity to help at this point. For so many come to the church seeking private counsel for their ills. But the church stands in a tradition which affirms that to seek your life is to lose it, while to lose your life in service to God and others is to find it. The public life gives us the chance to lose ourselves and others, and thereby find ourselves healed and whole again." At the beginning of this morning's service, you heard Anna Cataldo Holmes read words from the prophet Micah that ended with the powerful message that what is required of each of us is to love mercy, do justice, and walk humbly with our God. Those words have been a part of my life for as long as I can remember, and they define a critical aspect of what religion is for me. I really don't remember when I first heard them or read them, but they took hold in my mind, and they have refused to let go. I remember thinking of those words when I decided to go to law school. And I remember them coming into my head on the day I was sworn in as a lawyer, nearly 35 years ago. I remember drawing strength and inspiration from those words as I spoke to victims of violent abuse when I was a prosecutor. And I remember hearing them in my head as I walked into a courtroom as defense counsel for a most unpopular and despised defendant. Those words were also what called me to ministry. They have been in my heart when I have undertaken and led social justice work as a minister, and they have been the inspiration for many a sermon and even a hymn that I wrote, the one that you all just sang. For as long as I can remember, I have felt a kinship with those who have, or who were searching for justice in the world. I suspect that my deep sensitivity to that issue stems from my own experience of exclusion and unjust treatment as a gay man when I was younger. And strange as it may sound, in my life, I live with a sort of internal justice meter always running. I have to tell you that sometimes it can be a real struggle just to watch the news, because often the reports push the arrow of my imaginary meter to the limits on the unjust side of the scale. This week was one of those weeks when the justice meter was vacillating wildly. On the positive side, the don't ask, don't tell policy in our military finally and officially came to an end. Now gays and lesbians can honestly serve their country without having to conceal who they are. This is a huge step. But of course, there is still a long way to go, as gay partners of those in the military will still not be entitled to receive most of the benefits that their straight counterparts do. But on the other side of the meter, this was again a week of executions, even of an individual whose guilt was highly questionable. I know firsthand the errors that can and do occur and the prejudices of race and class that are still embedded in our judicial system. And it sickens me that in this modern age, the barbaric death penalty is still constitutional in this nation, when most of all the civilized world has long, long ago abandoned it. Well, I could go on, but the point is that every day we as a society are faced with serious questions about justice. As a faith tradition, Unitarian Universalism has been in the forefront of proclaiming justice as a critical part of religion. The parts of our Jewish and Christian heritage that we most emphasize are the teachings of justice. In our principles, we state that we affirm justice, equity, and compassion in human relationships, and the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all. You know, every year at our General Assembly, we pass statements of social witness and proclaim our faith's application of these particular principles to some issue that's facing our society. There's no doubt that we believe in the principles of justice and engage them in our analysis of the world around us. We talk about justice quite well. But believing in justice, being sensitive to issues of justice, and talking about justice are not enough. Think back to those words of Micah again. According to that ancient prophet, each of us is required to do justice. He doesn't say we're required to believe in justice or even to talk about justice. He argues that we are required to do justice. That command of the ancient prophet gets carried forward in the Christian tradition, particularly in the book of James. Let me paraphrase just a little bit of that text. It says something like this. If you say to your naked or hungry sister or brother, I'm opposed to hunger and poverty. Go in peace, keep warm, and eat your fill. But yet you don't give them food or shelter. What good is that? Does this kind of response demonstrate your faith? James goes on to say something like this. You can try to show me your faith, your deep personal beliefs about justice or love and compassion, by talking about them apart from your deeds. But I will show you my works, and then you will know my faith. Throughout our Unitarian and Universalist histories, we have been blessed with many doers of justice, from Clara Barton, who founded the American Red Cross, to Dorothea Dix, who improved conditions for prisoners and the mentally ill, to Horace Mann, who brought us public education, to Susan B. Anthony, who fought for universal suffrage, from Joseph Tuckerman, who in the early 1800s helped the poor in the city of Boston and began what we now know as our Unitarian Universalist Urban Ministry. To Theodore Parker, who also in the city of Boston helped runaway slaves get to freedom. In more recent time, we were doers in the civil rights movement. Did you know that more Unitarian Universalist clergy marched with Dr. King and Selma than clergy from any other denomination? We've been in the forefront of the struggle for gay and lesbian rights. We were the first major denomination to ordain women in the mid-1800s and openly gay and lesbian ministers in the 20th century. We come from a line of not just talkers, but doers of justice. It's a great history, and we should know it and share it. But celebrating those deeds from the past and articulating principles of justice as they relate to issues in our own time is just not enough. I believe that this faith still calls each of us to be doers of justice, just like the prophet Micah did in ancient times. Now, I want to acknowledge that sometimes it is not easy to be a doer of justice. Actual hands-on engagement with the work of justice can be difficult, and sometimes something within us can hold us back. It might be that we don't have time or that we don't think that our small effort will really matter. But I think there's something more about our comfort level as privileged folks, often working across differences of race and class. Now, not every opportunity to do justice requires that of us, but many do, and it can be challenging. If you come to do the work of justice in a community different from your own, with the expectation that people are waiting for your talents and will thank you profusely for being so kind to sacrifice a day from your busy schedule to try and make them more like you, it is not going to be a successful encounter. And that's where the other part of what Micah had to say comes in, that walking humbly part. We need to realize when we do the service, when we serve others and do the work of justice, that we need them, our souls need them, as much as they need what we're doing, maybe even more. And that's what Parker Palmer is getting at in the reading I shared with you. Although many come to a church seeking what he calls a sort of private therapy, engaging in the work of justice provides us with a level of fulfillment that private spiritual practice and even loving community alone cannot. There is a spiritual fulfillment that only comes from being a doer of justice. In Palmer's words, when we engage in the work of justice, we, quote, find ourselves healed and whole again. It's important that we recognize the way individuals within our community are engaging in the work of justice. We can learn from and be inspired by the experience of others. So this morning, I've invited several individuals to briefly share their experience of doing justice here with you and how that experience affects them. So I'd ask the four of them if they would come forward now to the seats here, and we'll just take one at a time.
Hi, I'm Keith Alcott, and I'm a walking advertisement for Fair Trade. Which is a subset of social justice. It's one big piece of it in my mind. You know, historically, there have been so many great social justice people, icons, and also just knowing what some people do in this congregation, that it's an extremely hard act to follow, but it's a great act to join. So today I'm advertising for getting involved in social justice. Happily, You can do it as much or as little as you want. You could drink a cup of fair trade coffee, which we have over there for you. It's the coffee that's served, and the coffee we sell as well as many other fair trade products. Okay, my aha moment, liberal arts graduate joins the Peace Corps, completely at random, ends up in Guatemala in the 70s. A civil war has been going on for I don't know how many years, and it will continue for I don't know how many years. I'm a history major. I'm there to work with farmers in agriculture. Talk about feeling humble. So, a farmer is spraying his crops with a pesticide made by Bayer, who knew they made pesticides instead of aspirin or as well as aspirin. And I read the label. He's illiterate. The label says, you should wear a space suit if you're spraying this stuff, basically. And I say to him, do you know what you're doing? You're poisoning yourself. He of course, is wearing sandals, shorts, etc. And he looks at me and he says, because most watermelons are about this high to me, and says, I have to make a choice. I can spray this and feed my family today, or not spray it and we don't have food. And I was like, okay, the world does not quite work the way I thought it would. And that was my launching point to social justice. And I've managed to put myself in jobs most of my life that embody this. I've been in equal exchange for close to 15 years now. So how does it affect others? Well, actually, so Equal Exchange is not a nonprofit. We're a mission-based company, but we're a for-profit because we want to demonstrate to other businesses in the U.S. you can do good and make money, both of which I think we're doing successfully. In terms of how it affects the farmers, it's not a charity. We only deal with farmer cooperatives, and they call a lot of the shots. In fact, one large farmer cooperative owns stock in our company. And then how is it connected to the church? Well, the church supports the fair trade table, which is fabulous, and hopefully you enjoy the products along the way. How does it make me feel? Well, it's very gratifying to get up each day, and hopefully at least in some part of the day when I'm not grumbling about the traffic on Route 2, et cetera, I realize that even though my job, like many of you, it's in some ways just a job, at the end of the day, you know that it's a lot more than just a job. So I invite you, it's not that hard to get involved in social justice. You can start with small steps and please do.
Good morning. I'm Bob Tabor. On December 26, 2004, it was a sunny, beautiful day, blue sky, and it was an earthquake and a tsunami off Indonesia that hit Indonesia, India, Thailand. And we listened to the news and we heard 50,000, 100,000, 200,000 dead. And I felt at that point there must be something even I could do. When I sent out emails and I, all these organizations, and I received a phone call, could I come and help? And, you know, our covenant says service is its law and we should help one another. And it just felt like even I could do something. So my phone call was from India and I went, India is a country with a nuclear bomb and a space program, where the average worker earns $1.50 a day and 50% of the people don't have electricity in their village and they cook over an open fire and 90% of the children don't finish high school. So I went, and the first year I spent 3 months there doing tsunami relief. I was in villages where a third to half the people disappeared in 2 hours. So we spent most of our time. I met some Swedish students and a fellow from Nepal and a volunteer translator, and we were the only Caucasians he met for 3 months. We supplied food, we built houses, we built roads, we put in toilets. And for 2 years, the first 2 years I went, we were rebuilding and spending time at an orphanage with 40 children. In the second year, we added to the orphanage and brought it up to 60 children. The reason I'm telling you about these projects is because this church has helped dramatically. We've supplied support, emotional support for me, financial support for these projects, support for the children at the orphanage. You're sponsoring 8 children at the orphanage now. It costs $350 a year to sponsor a child for 1 year, food, clothing, medical, school. And 6 other children are sponsored by people outside the church. You help produce the Friendship Kids each year. You send photos of your children. So we rebuild the villages. We form self-help groups for women in the villages. Years 3 through 5, Vicky came with me. Spent a lot of time at the orphanage with the children. Did micro-lending. We went to the villages, and with your support, offer them to build preschools. It costs $2,500 to build a preschool in the village. If we have a preschool, the mother can work in the rice paddies and earn up to $1.50 a day, so the children can go to school. We build a toilet. They get a hot meal. The children begin an education, and when they're 9 and 12 years old, the mothers don't have to take them out to work because the mother can work. Years 6 through 7, the orphanage is now 67 children. We supply them with some computers. The older children are going to trade school, nursing school, carpentry school. They're there from ages of 5 to 15, and they'll live their lives in the orphanage. And they feel this tremendous tie to this community, from the photographs, from the sponsorship. Tom gives me photos at the church to bring. I bring the CD of the choir, and they hear the children singing our songs. So what I've learned is that by showing up with no set of skills, we can serve just by being there. I wondered, because they all spoke Tamil, but language, especially with children, isn't a barrier. That love and compassion go 2 ways. And so I just tell you, by showing up and serving, we give and we receive. And I just encourage you to find a place, a shelter, a school, anywhere where you can give and receive.
Good morning. I'm John Tully. I've been attending First Parish Church for about 2 or 3 years. And during that period, I've also been a regular participant in the UU Urban Ministries United Souls program at the Urban Ministries facility at First Church of Roxbury. The United Souls program is a men's support network. It was originally established as a support for men in transition back into the Roxbury, Dorchester, Mattapan community from homelessness, histories of substance abuse, and in some cases incarceration. It's the driving force behind the group has been a gentleman by the name of Sam Williams, who's now the director of operations of the Urban Ministry, and is a real a true role model and power example for people in the community and in the urban ministry itself. While initially the group was an older group, during my participation there, it's the more usual attendee at the meetings has been young men who may have come up through the mentoring and tutorial programs run by the urban ministry and at the facility, and as a continuing support for them moving their lives forward in a positive direction. And one of the joys of participating in the group is seeing There are four young men now who were have been members of the group who are now in, actively involved in four-year colleges and moving ahead. And these are people who young men who often grew up without positive male role models in their lives. And while I'd like to think that they're, you know, that my participation may have benefited them, as Tom was alluding to earlier, my life has been enriched far more, I think, than theirs, by just viewing the strength and inspiration and courage of people coming from backgrounds far different from the largely white and middle class background that I came up from, and overcoming challenges that I didn't have to support. So this is an opportunity for me to give back and benefit from their experience and courage. While I also benefited from or enjoyed the experience last in the spring when we members of this community went into the First Parish Church and served a meal at the Roxbury Youth Program participants, and look forward to further opportunities to participate with members of this congregation, hopefully on a more regular basis, in involving and engaging with the community. So thank you.
Just interject that Sam Williams, which he referred to, will be preaching the sermon 3 weeks from today.
Hi, I'm Dave Kay, and I'd invite you to imagine, hold in your mind right now the town of Stowe, and how well you know your way around Stowe or the town that you live in, and then imagine having no recognizable landmark whatsoever, completely flattened, piles of rubble everywhere, streets impassable, wires down, a minimal government, a government unable to respond, a group of neighbors whose level of trust with each other up until that point had been marked by the fact that they have high walls about 3 to 4 meters high around their backyards with broken glass on the top. And you're faced with basically dust. And that was the situation that occurred on August 15th, 2007, in the city of Pisco, Peru, which is a city of about 130,000 people. It was 85% level. It is not designed to handle earthquakes or anything else, not even rain. They have like 0.01 inches of rain a year there. So if your vision of Peru is Machu Picchu, this is the exact opposite. This is more like Death Valley with a coastline. And that's probably the only thing that really saved most people was their houses were constructed of adobe, which fell down, but their roofs were constructed of tarps and bamboo, which didn't hurt quite so much when falling down. At that time, 2007, I was in a very jumbled period. I had just lost the two remaining members of my family. I myself had a cancer diagnosis. I had gone to graduate school and come out unemployed. But at the same time, I had far more assets than the people down in Pisco, Peru. For one thing, my wife had a job and was working. We had frequent flyer miles that could be applied. I had the money and the resources to do something. And I had a friend who had been doing this in various places around the world already, and he was going down to Pisco and invited me to come down with him. So I set myself up for 2 weeks, flew to Pisco, Peru. I had never been in South America before. Last time I had spoken Spanish was back in 10th grade, and I will not tell you how long ago that was. 20 or 25 years ago. Yeah, we'll say that. So I went down there on my own. Pisco is about 3 hours bus ride south of Lima, Peru. Lima had felt some of the effects, but nothing like Pisco. a landscape I had never seen the like of in my life, very desolate, very dry, and got there, and it was leveled. I was joining a group which at the time was called Hands On. I am a walking advertisement for myself. I was a voluntario, as it says in the back of my shirt. And what they had done, this was a gentleman with a spirit and ability not unlike Bob Tabers, who had started with another disaster in the world, and he lives in Carlisle, and he had just decided what we need is hands-on in these places. We need people with hands to do stuff. So they had an organization. They had found a safe house, which is what they do, for volunteers to come and stay in. It was happened to be one of the few buildings that was steel-reinforced concrete, and it was right next to the National Guard building, which is also steel-reinforced concrete. So anyway, we had a safe place to go. I spoke the language kind of, sort of. I was going down with friends, and there was no really good reason for me not to go. I mean, I, like so many of you here, I've read this thing. It's like, service is our law. You know, we generally don't get language that strong in our church. So, you know, I had to go. And the circumstances had conspired that it felt right to go. Getting down there, the first thing we did was clear rubble. After an earthquake, the biggest obstacle, and this is still true in Haiti today, is that you can't do anything. There are giant piles of very, very heavy rubble everywhere, including where your house used to be, including in the street. So the first thing you got to do is get the rubble out of the way so you can do something else, get a truck through. The hospitals had been destroyed, so there was medical services being set up. My first responsibility was to join a rubble team, of which we had many. We cleared, in the end, we cleared something like 400 lots of rubble by hand. Where there were still walls standing, we could sometimes kick them down with our booted feet. And so that was one of the responsibilities, but there were many things to do, which was a real blessing. They had, the UN had what they called ludotecas, which are safe play areas for the kids. I went and volunteered at one of those. And to give you an idea of just exactly how desolate they were left, one of my strongest memories is there was a little boy who was acting up, as many of them were at that time. And he had managed to find two broken toy vehicles. One was a truck and the other one was a car. And he found some duct tape. He managed to put the back of the truck on the front of the car and form a toy. And I was thinking, boy, it'd be great if we just had a little ramp that he could roll that down. And there was nothing to make a ramp out of. There's like nothing to that long and that firm to make a ramp out of. So we had to find a soggy piece of cardboard, lash a broken splintered piece of bamboo to the back, and then he could roll his car down this little slope. And that was a big deal for him. So anyway, it was a real privilege to go. It was very interesting being in another society that had no instance of public service whatsoever. They didn't understand what we were doing down there in many cases. Some people would come out and give us a big hug and say, bless you for doing this. The young men would sit around and laugh at us and call us idiots for working for free. So it was an educational experience, not always positive, but in retrospect, an amazingly valuable experience. So if the circumstances strike that allow you to do something like that, I'd recommend it to you.
Thank you all. You know, there are opportunities every day, large ones and small ones, to become engaged in doing the work of justice. You've heard how some folks here in the church have been and are doing that. So this service is an invitation to you to find a way, no matter how small, to do something for justice. It's an invitation to say, my religion is justice, and then to embody that theology. It can mean shopping more carefully to buy products that are produced by workers who are treated fairly. It could be working for environmental justice by recycling. It could be participating in a peace vigil. But it could go even further, taking you to places where you directly connect across differences with humble service or deal with difficult issues, like perhaps working with those who are immigrants on immigration issues. Maybe it could be working on a Habitat for Humanity project or a service trip like our youth are planning, or volunteering at a food pantry or a meal site, or at our urban ministry, where you can directly affect the lives of inner-city youth by just being in that program is safe and off the streets of Roxbury, and they are doing things that improve their chances for a better life. You know, October is our urban ministry month, and there are sign-up sheets even this morning over at the social action table with two opportunities where you can give your time to do some justice. One is real fun. It's just helping with a program for the smaller kids called the Explorer Club on a Saturday morning, and we're going to do fall activities, pumpkin painting, apple bobbing. We need some artists to help us with particularly the pumpkin painting. And another is we're going to repeat our Mexican dinner this year at the end of the month. It's backed by popular demand, so we need people to cook and serve and come into Roxbury with us. There are also other social action opportunities that you can find out about at the table or perhaps from this morning's speakers as well. Ways you can connect to putting your faith into action. Many of you are already doing justice. And what I want you to know is that this church supports you in your work. Others of you are thinking about it and maybe even a bit afraid to take the leap. I want you to know that we can help you with that too. We declare that as part of the mission of this church is to courageously build a caring and just world. Do the work of justice because your neighbors need you, because the world needs you, and your efforts know no matter how small, do matter. But also do the work because you need to do it. When we say my religion is justice, it means we are doers of justice. And doing justice is a spiritual practice that will profoundly enrich your life. Thank you.